From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect.
I probably say it once in a while, but I do want to tell you what a privilege and an honor it is to spend time with you daily on ABQ Connect in the 1 o'clock hour. I love connecting in the community. I love having the local organizations on the air, which, by the way, if you haven't been to our website in a while, go to klyt.fm. You'll find the organizations page on the website. You'll also find the events page about some of the things coming up. One of those is happening with our friends at Calvary Chapel Southwest. That's on Fortuna, just across from West Mesa High School. And coming up this Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, you'll pass the word about this to those in your circle of influence that may need a little bit of assistance. The Bridge of Hope Food Pantry is going to be 9 a.m. this Saturday. It reaches out to families in need of food the second Saturday, actually, of each month. If you know someone who needs the assistance or you'd like to donate, they need non-perishable food items, and you'll find the details about the Bridge of Hope Food Pantry at calvarysouthwest.com. And remember, you can hear Ray Montoya of Calvary Southwest every Saturday and Sunday night at 6 o'clock on Keeping It Real. So weekends, a couple of opportunities to hear that. So we hope you'll be a part of either supporting the Bridge of Hope Food Pantry or letting others who need that kind of assistance know more about it. We're going to have much of the hour today, if not all, with Ray Mondragon. Ray is a regular guest to ABQ Connect and is one of the professors at Chafer Seminary. Theological Seminary. Thanks, Ray. I knew you'd fix it. But also a member of the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico, which we mention often. The third Tuesday of each month, at 7 p.m., which is next Tuesday, they have their monthly meeting. It's free to attend. And I'm going to guess, Ray, you know, whether they're watching a DVD or having someone speak, almost every week, is there Q&A typically?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, always.
It's a great place to go to have that kind of a discussion.
Yeah, in fact, we're fairly informal, so.
Yeah.
And it's relatively small groups, so.
Well, let's make it bigger.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. but we'll continue to announce it so you know what's going on. And Ray, actually, what do I want to say? You're filling a gap. There was going to be another speaker this month, but they've kind of done some rescheduling, and Ray's going to be in there this Tuesday night at Faith Bible Church at Moon and Central at 7 p.m. But anytime you want to go see, you know, what that ministry is all about, you can go to their website at csfnm.org. And Ray, this coming Tuesday, Babel, Myth or History, and Why It's Important for Creation Science. We're going to walk through some of that today.
Yeah, we're going to look at Babel today and give you a lot of things that you probably never heard before.
And as I was walking through some of your resume, I do want to remind people, we've mentioned your book before too, Science is God Shouting. You can look for details at truegracebooks.com. I'm going to guess probably on your website as well they'd find information.
Not on the book. I need to post it there. But right.
But
now,
since I went there, let people know more about what they'll find at your website.
Well, my website, I've got three major areas that I deal with, and it's forhisglorynm.com. F-O-R, forhisglorynm.com. The three major areas is just, the main thing I do is Bible teaching. So there's a whole exposition tab that has many of the Bible studies. In fact, all of them for the last 15 years, I believe, that I generally do. So I record them and then put them on the website. And the second tab is a creation science web tab that put these radio interviews on, as well as a series that I might do for different churches or seminars.
We appreciate you not only coming in studio and spending the time with us to walk through some of this, but making that at no cost available.
Oh yeah,
on the website at four. It's FOR, by the way, not the digit. Mm-hmm. It's FOR, His Glory, For His Glory, NM.com.
And also free, I've got a third tab where I have some of the entire seminary courses that I've taught.
Oh, okay. At Chafer.
On the website.
Yeah, chafer.edu, by the way. Chafer .edu. And go find out more about what keeps Ray busy. Man, Ray, you're one of those guys, I just can't ever imagine you retiring. And for those who don't see Ray come in, he comes, when he gets on campus, one of the first things he does is gets off of his bicycle, which he rides everywhere. Ray, you've done a good job keeping yourself fit.
Coming up on 110,000 miles.
Oh, on that bike or
not
total?
Not on that bike.
Okay.
Just kind of career.
Yeah. Nice. When did you start?
Oh, I don't know. I have to look at my log. 40 or so years ago.
Yeah, in Albuquerque, even on this show,
haven't been killed yet.
Yeah, even with you, we've talked about, I don't know how often I bring up how much I love New Mexico, but how terrible things can really be here. Hmm. However, the bike paths that
Albuquerque is one of the best cities to ride.
Was that a Mayor Chavez thing, or who?
I think it was him, and maybe even before.
Yeah,
but, there's
Kenny.
Could have been. I don't know. I don't remember.
Is that even right? I want to. Anyway. Anyway, let's get back. Squirrel, we kind of got off course there, but we do want to bring it back around and talk a little bit about Babel and insights from creation science. A little bit. Now, this is this is much of what you'll be covering next Tuesday night.
Yeah, but I'd like to just somewhat promo it, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
And give you a little bit of a taste of what I'll be speaking in more detail.
Well, and I want to say this as we go through it, because some people may be listening I don't need to go. Yeah, no, you should go Tuesday and bring someone with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, to Creation Science Fellowship in New Mexico. Again, that's it.
Especially some public school kids that don't hear this perspective. All they get is the evolutionary perspective.
7 p.m. this Tuesday night at Faith Bible Church Central and Moon. All right, Ray, have at it. I'm taking notes.
Well, we always want to take a look at a secular view. So we want to contrast. Obviously, the secular view doesn't take into account what happened at Babel, much less looking at it as a historical fact. That's why I title it Myth or Mystery. So the secularist would consider Babel mythological, maybe a legend. There might be some lessons you might learn from it. But they don't view it as a historical event. So I'm going to deal with it as a historical event. Now, I title it Babel Myth or History, and the second title is Why Is It Important for Creation Science? And I put creation science there because I'm going to speak to a creation science audience, but you might even title it Why Is It Important to Humanity? And there's a lot of reasons that Babel is very significant. In fact, it's one of the four major events that we have recorded. The first four major events of world history would be creation, the fall of man, where everything changed. The entire universe was radically affected as a result of the fall of man. Thirdly, the Genesis flood, another historical event that radically made some other changes to the entire creation. In fact, there's some evidence that it goes even beyond the earth in terms of physical effects. And then the fourth one is Babel. And we're living in a post-flood world and a post-Babel world.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you, which, by the way, If you want to raise your hand and ask a question,
just call in.
Yeah, you can do that. 505-338-5790. Here's the number again. 505-338-5790. And Tayshawn, who's engineering the show today, which, by the way, thank you, Tayshawn, for making us sound so good and making things happen there. And you can call in and ask your question. But my first question, I always said Babel. Is it tomato, tomato, or is there a...
Either way.
Okay.
Depends on what part of the country you come from.
All righty.
Babel.
Making sure I didn't... Okay.
Now, it actually comes from the concept of babbling.
Yeah.
And...
Well, did Babel come... Did the concept of Babel...
Yes.
...come from...
Babel.
Right. Okay, yeah. That's kind of what I thought.
Yeah, there was a city by the name of Babel.
Uh-huh.
Where the text tells us, now the whole earth used the same language and the same words, and it came about as they journeyed east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there.
Now, are we in Genesis 11?
Genesis 11.
Okay. And actually, before we jump in, a real quick question, because you were talking about the secular view, biblical view.
Right.
Does this secular view have something that's, I mean, I guess when I think, before, if you would ask me the secular view, I would have said, well, what people who aren't engaged with the Word of God, what they might have heard about it, and mm-hmm. just kind of, you know, like you said, but is there anything they add or take away from it?
Well, they ignore it. In fact, they view... the whole Genesis incident as mythological in general. But I believe, and the text indicates, that it's just as historical as Abraham. That's the next story in the book of Genesis. So it's a historical event that radically changed humanity and, in fact, radically changed how people interact. Because as a result of the confusion of languages, in other words, that's the origin of language. So the secular view looks towards the origin of language from an evolutionary perspective, the origin of nations similarly. They don't see the origin of nations and or languages as coming from a particular singular event like what the Bible indicates. And in fact, it's as a result of a judgment that God pronounces, and he is the one that radically changes. Even you'd have to conclude that he changes even the mentality, the thinking processes of mankind in order that languages would instantaneously come about. So the evolutionary viewpoint would be that man, over long times, and as he got distant from one another, they developed their own dialects, that sort of idea. So it's all based on an evolutionary mindset. But one of the main things that I want to develop is not only deal with it as a historical event, but some of the main implications of it. And there's a lot of evidence that goes totally contrary to not only the evolutionary viewpoint, but what you might expect in terms of what would you expect after such an event. Well, biblically, the very opposite of evolution, there's evidence for that in that when we discover these cultures, and I'm going to trace cultures in South America, North America, even Africa, that show evidence of very advanced technology that arises very, very early in the historical record. Hard data. One of the most obvious is just the existence of pyramids all over the world. These are high tech, and I'm going.
Oh yeah,
I'm gonna,
I mean, any of us who've see any of the pyramids, yeah. It's like, man, to have been, you know, as old as however old anyone thinks they are, mm-hmm. to be in that time 200 years ago to do it.
Yeah.
Although it was much longer ago, I understand that. But yeah, they are super high tech. Hey, by the way, we're up against a break. We're going to take a quick break. Can we do that?
Sure.
And we're visiting with Ray Mondragon with the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. He'll be speaking next Tuesday night at Moon and Central at Faith Bible Church. You can find out more at csfnm.org. But today, kind of giving you a sneak peek at what to expect when Ray speaks next week. And by the way, that'll just be part one. Later in the summer, you'll have another evening where you're there to kind of cover more in part two. We'll keep people appraised.
Good.
All right. We'll be back with more with Ray Mondragon right after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, we're going to continue our conversation with Ray Mondragon. Ray, as we mentioned at the top of the hour, one of the professors at Schaefer Seminary, schaefer.edu, he's also author of Science Is God Shouting, which details at truegracebooks.com. You also find other material from Ray on his website at forhisglorynm.com. And we'll get back. We're going to pick up that conversation here real quick. But I did want to draw you to this weekend on KLYT. Gospel brunch happens every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. With your host, Kelly. And listen, it's a full, it's a four course, really. It starts with an appetizer at 8 a.m. We're going to have John Lennox on this week on The Word Became Flesh. That should be good. Our featured teacher at 8 a.m. And then at 11:30, the live service from Calvary Church, Jeremiah Johnston is going to contribute to the current series, Benefit of the Doubt, that we're doing at Calvary Church. Jeremiah is at Prestonwood, I think. That's Jack Graham's church in Dallas. He's one of the pastors on staff there, and he's been a guest speaker here in the past. And he is actually, I want to say, the one that was really a big part of bringing the Shroud experience, the Shroud of Turin experience to Calvary Church, which starts April 12th. So that's just coming up this weekend. It will run through April 21st, I think the Monday after Easter. If you want to find out more about that experience, the event is posted. It'll be in the, I believe it'll be in the lobby at Calvary Church. You can go to calvarynm.church for more information about the Shroud experience. But Jeremiah Johnston speaking this weekend, we'll hear him at 11:30 as part of the Gospel Brunch. And then the third course is the podcast from Veritas International University, Paratus. Paratus is currently going through archaeology and the Bible. The fourth course every Sunday is at 1 o'clock. We feature a worship project and don't have those details, but it's always good. 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. is Gospel Brunch on KLYT with your host, Kelly. We hope you'll tune in over the weekend. Let's get back to our conversation with Ray Mondragon. Ray, we were talking about Babel and insights from creation science. We talked a little bit in our first segment about the secular view of the history of Babel as opposed to the biblical view. I don't know if there's more on that or if we're pressing on into Genesis 11.
Well, from the text, though, we can begin to investigate the whole concept of language. And one of the things that I will develop on Tuesday is a biblical foundation for language. And I think if you want to study and understand linguistics, this will give you a foundation to understanding the whole area of linguistic and language, particularly where it came from and the implications relating to why God instituted different languages. So we'll look at a biblical foundation to language. And stemming from that, this is the origin also of nations. So you can begin a whole study in terms of ethnicity and nationality and the whole concept relating to nations. What is a biblical foundation for the nations that we still live amongst nations with different languages? And we don't think about it, but they had an origin, and the Bible gives us all of that and gives some foundational insights that help us to understand what God is doing in the world. So this chapter, chapter 11 of the book of Genesis, is very significant and important for all of mankind, not just for creation science. But it does touch on elements of creation science because we have origins there, origins of languages and nations.
And how help me connect that to creation? I mean, how does that mean because of the timeline or where it fits? How does it support?
Well, obviously creation, God creating all things,
yeah.
And languages, where did they come from?
Mm-hmm.
And a biblical foundation of language goes all the way back to Genesis 1, and there's concepts in Genesis 1 that tell us that language comes from God, not man. In other words, verse 3, and God said. So, and also, when you get to chapter 11, you find out that, even in chapter 1, when man is created in the image of God, God builds language as part of man's makeup, and that language aspect and the thinking process God put there, and that's part of the image of God as well, because God speaks, and God said. In fact, every creative day begins with, and God said. So that's the origin of language there. That precedes man. And then when man is created, God built within man the ability to communicate using language. And then when you get to chapter 11, we find out that all of humanity was speaking that one language that God built into them. And then it goes on and explains that God confused the language. So he did something physically, psychologically, intellectually to affect man's mind, such that he was no longer able to communicate easily with one another, and that's the origin of languages.
And of course, we can assume most people listening, you know, are familiar with the Genesis account of the Tower of Babel and Babel,
right?
Babel, if you will. For someone who may be listening, who is, you know, kind of on the myth realm, you know, the myth mm-hmm. thinking mm-hmm. on this, well, it's just a story.
Right.
Well, it is a story. It just happens to be a true story.
Right.
But, it's just a story. For those—
Well, we believe that it's the inspired version of a historical event.
Right, right.
And if you believe—
yeah,
if you're
what we read in Genesis is God breathed.
Right.
Yes.
And we believe that it is inerrant as well.
Amen.
If you're conservative. And,
but to speak to someone who is along the lines of the myth version— mm-hmm. Where in their story is there a why for the tower? Does it line up at all with Scripture for why the tower and why? I guess their why for the language was no. Eventually, people just from different areas started speaking differently.
Yeah, the isolation
But why the the tower in their story?
There is no tower.
Okay.
It's mythological.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In other words, it's a nice story, but if you want to look for it. But that's part of the evidence from creation science. There's actually evidence of the possibility of the tower itself. If not, we see all over the world a technology that moved men, or men used that technology to create all of these pyramids that occur all over the world.
Okay.
In different cultures. Now, where did this technology come from? And the Bible gives the simple explanation. It came as a result of the pre-Babel cultures that had this technology. And once they were scattered, now they take this technology with them, and you see it reappear. So I'm going to give, in the second talk, I'm going to focus on all of that evidence all over the world. There's some evidence in Peru of high technology. There's evidence, obviously, the pyramids themselves, the Middle East, even in China. And there's even some pre-flood artifacts that have been uncovered in coal beds, for example, that give evidence of high technology culture.
Very good.
Rather than a slow progressing evolutionary scenario, the Bible and there's physical evidence indicates that what the Bible speaks of in the early chapters of Genesis has some archaeological evidence.
All right. And by the way, as we go through this, and I mentioned earlier, you know, the way you raise your hand, especially when raised here, really any of the guests we have here, we typically, the phones are open. We just don't often get a call. I think a lot of people prefer to text or, which by the way, we're working on getting a new, new number for texting. You can call, and we actually encourage you to interrupt us because we would love to answer your questions. As Ray covers the Babel and its place in creation science, you can call 505-338-5790. That's 338-5790. Would love to hear from you. Listen, we're up against another break. We're going to take a quick break and come back continue our look in Genesis to look at, as Ray mentioned, you know, that not only, you know, at the time of Babel was there the foundation, you know, the foundation for different languages and different nations. We're going to dive a little bit deeper into the table of nations. That's a little preview of what's on the way. So, Ray, can you stay with us?
Sure.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more right after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect. Since we have a phone call, I want to go straight to it. I want to let you know about some stuff coming up with Johnny and Friends. Before I jump into that, let's welcome our phone call onto ABQ Connect. Thanks for calling in. Who is this? We have a caller. Caller, can you hear me? Okay. All right, we'll get back to that. Johnny and Friends, and thanks, Tayshawn, for letting us know. Let me know if we get our caller back on the line. Johnny and Friends, they're having their third annual New Mexico Golf Classic. That is happening on Thursday, May 1st at 8 a.m. At Sandia Golf Club. It's a four-man scramble. It starts at 8 a.m. Actually, yeah, it starts at... I believe it starts at 8 a.m., a shotgun start. It's on the 1st at Sandia. Lunch is going to follow, and there'll be a presentation by Johnny and Friends New Mexico, then the awards ceremony. Proceeds benefit Johnny and Friends New Mexico Family Retreat and Warrior Getaway. They typically do that, I know, down in Lincoln County. If you want to be a part of what Johnny and Friends is doing to reach out to the disabled here in New Mexico, go to their website at Johnny and Friends, JONIAND, johnnyandfriends.org/new-Mexico. They're also having a respite night at New Covenant Church on Friday, May 9th at 5:30. New Covenant has put that on their website. You can go to nccabq.org for details on that Friday, May 9th at 5:30. Let's get back to Ray, and I'm going to assume I'll ask our engineer, Tayshawn, is our phone caller gone? Okay. Did they leave a question or, okay, what, and there, I guess the question is simply what is wrong with the Tower of Babel? Was that their question? I wish they would have stayed on the phone. Maybe, listener, if you're listening, call back. Because that's that's a pretty open question. What was wrong with the Tower of Babel?
Maybe she was wondering why would God destroy it,
right? And do what he did as far as languages. Right. Let's go that route, and hopefully we'll get listener. We'll get and thank you for calling in. Feel free to stay with us, hang out, and talk. We always welcome the dialogue. Mm-hmm. But Ray, let's go ahead and let's go that route.
Well, if that was their question, it's clear in the scriptures. In fact, Genesis 1, one of the purposes that is given to Adam was to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. In other words, the entire planet, God intended to populate it through one family, basically. They would eventually have descendants that would spread throughout the world.
And he did.
Right, exactly.
A couple times.
And then the Genesis flood, after the Genesis flood, all mankind is wiped out. That command is reissued to Noah.
Right.
But what happened at Babel, the text tells us, Genesis 11:3, they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they used brick for stone and they used tar for mortar. So they had some technology.
Okay. And I think our caller's back on the line. Listener, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, thanks for calling back. Who is this?
My name is Scott.
Scott, thanks so much for calling. Okay. And obviously you're listening to us. Are we headed down the road you were hoping to have covered?
Well, I guess what I'm wondering is God comes and says, okay, if they're building this now, what else are they going to be able to do? That sort of thing. But I'm wondering, what is the contrast between that with them with all that we're doing now? Basically, we're gods in our own eyes. We're going into space. We're building buildings that are, you know, hundreds of stories high.
So is the question, let me try to tell you what I'm kind of hearing, is the question, is doing those things bad, or is the perspective we have as we do it the issue?
The perspective.
Yeah, right. So the question is, you know, are these things really necessarily that bad? Or, okay, and is there anything you wanted to add to that, Scott?
Well, no, I guess it's just that specific attitude they had. We're going to build this tower, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to reach up to the heavens. That seems to be, from my reading, what their basic attitude was.
Okay.
And we have that same attitude today. You know, maybe not to touch God because society doesn't believe in God, but to prove how great we are. We're building these buildings. We're going to space. We're putting in space stations. It seems to me it's in some ways it's all the same attitude.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you calling and appreciate you listening, Scott. We hope the programming is a blessing to you. Ray?
Yeah, there's actually, I think you're alluding to two different and distinct attitudes. One of them deals with the use of technology, and I don't think God has any problem with technology in itself. In fact, that's part of the creation mandate, is to subdue the earth. In other words, harness the resources and utilize them. So the issue is not the development of technology and the ability to do fantastic things. The text itself is, in Genesis 11, is a second attitude. The attitude is the attitude of self-centeredness and rebellion. It's basically a rebellion against God and a determination to go totally contrary as a culture against God, what God made very clear to not only Adam, but made very clear to Noah, the very opposite. In fact, if you compare the words in Genesis 11 with the commandment that God gave both Adam and Noah, you see that the attitude was one of rebellion, and that is what God is judging. Not the capability, not the technology, but the attitude.
Let's turn down the caller, Tayshawn. And he could stay there, and we'll reach back out after we've covered it. We're getting some extra noise. Okay, go ahead. Sorry, Ray.
So it's the attitude of organized rebellion against God. And I think that's the attitude that that God is judging. And he intended that man fill the earth, and by bringing the judgment of the confusion of the languages, now men had to separate because they couldn't communicate with one another. So it was an interruption, certainly, of technology, but more so, it was the dividing of the people into the various nations. And as a result of Babel, people did, in fact, scatter, and we have evidence that they scattered all over the world. And we see evidence of that technology, not just pyramids, but there's lots of other technology that is so similar that the only explanation is it had to have a common source, and the common source would have been the pre-Babel peoples. And some of that evidence is what I'm going to show in the talk that we'll have. More of it in my talk in June, but I'm going to lay the foundation for it next Tuesday. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Is Scott still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
That does. It's been a while since I read the passage, so, and I had, I guess, not really considered the idea, like you just said, that God was trying to spread the people out over the face of the earth. I was looking more at it. It seemed like a rebellion against God in the sense, we can do this, we can build up as high as he is, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and absolutely. And to add on to what you're saying, if you trace through the entire Bible, I make the point that God deals with man on a long range, kind of era by era. And you can trace in the Bible what I call the cycles of sin. In other words, God does a work of grace. You could start off with the work of creation. And then man in sin degenerates. But God is long-suffering, the Bible teaches, and he endures and allows sin to reach its ultimate corruption, and then he intervenes. He intervened with the Genesis flood. He intervened at Babel. He intervened with the nation of Israel. And I believe we're living in a church age where God is going to intervene again and take the church out, and there's going to be a series of tribulation judgments. And then within each judgment, there's also salvation made available. That's the grace aspect. So these cycles continue. You have God intervening in judgment and grace, sin taking its course, and reaching its culmination. God allows it, and he's the only one that knows when it reaches its final culmination. Then he intervenes to save mankind, basically, from himself. So what you're observing is today our capability, high tech, great potential, but we are a rebellious people far from God as well. So
now we're just trying to take that.
We could be close to the end of this cycle.
We're trying to take that rebellion to Mars now, I guess. hey, Scott, I hope that is a help to you. And again, you know, if you'll stay on the line, we'll have our engineer get your contact. We'd like to get you a gift. But thanks for calling in. We appreciate you.
Well, thank you.
All right. And hey, we're up against the break, and we are going to leave the phone lines open, by the way. You know, if you were listening, you got another question, 505-338-5790. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and finish up with Ray Mondragon from the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. He'll be speaking next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock at Faith Bible Church, Moon at Central. So I hope to see you there, and hope to have you on the other side of the break to wrap it up with Ray on ABQ Connect. All right, thanks for calling in to ABQ Connect, and listeners are active today. I appreciate. Listen, I would love to have this daily where the listeners were more engaging on the conversation.
That last question was excellent.
Yeah, I want to thank Scott for calling in, and AJ is calling in. AJ, thanks for calling in on ABQ Connect.
Awesome. I love this station. I love listening to you guys. You guys always got a lot of great input. My main question was, you know, there's a couple guys that have passed away that I still like watching their material, Michael Heiser and Rob Skiba. Some of them get into Second Temple literature, like the Book of Jubilees, and how Jubilees talks about it being 200 miles high. And they actually thought that they could reach God and go to war with Yahweh. And I was wondering if you're going to touch base on that book at all, and whether it's authentic or not, and how that might correlate to like the pyramids. And the other question I had was are you going to touch base on how Paul knew that he was trying to re-inherit all these nations that were disinherited in Genesis 11? And that's why in Acts he knew he was going to get all the way to Tarshish, because it was the last nation on his mission to receive the gospel and be brought back into the family, because Genesis 11, he disinherits all nations, only has Abraham, and through Christ's work on the cross, we can all be re-inherited.
Well, I would, in terms of the book, I'm not going to touch on the book that you referenced, but we need to keep in mind those intertestamental books did not make it into the canon for a variety of reasons. It was determined that they didn't show enough evidence of inspiration, for one, mainly. So they're valuable, and they have a lot of historical information that is useful to us, but they're not inspired. So details like that may not be accurate or inspired, but they do add a little bit of the history that we don't have in that intertestamental period, and gives us some insight as to what the believers were like in those periods. So they're good.
The same way you'd use a book like Josephus when studying the times.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And your second question concerning Paul, I don't know the mind of Paul in terms of Tarshish. That was the known world, the edge of the world, known world, and I think he was intending to try to take the gospel to as many places as he could, plant churches with the hope that people would take what Jesus says in Matthew 28 seriously and share the gospel themselves, such that the whole world would hear the gospel, as is our commission today. But beyond that, that's about all I can say on your question there.
Does that help, AJ?
Yeah, that does help. You know, it's hard to take those Second Temple literature and really, you know, they're, like you said, they're not considered canon for a reason, but it does kind of leave you wondering, you know, I think of one big question too is, what do you think the pyramids play? I mean, there's a lot of things they're finding in the pyramids and under them now, like you're saying, with that technology. I don't know if you guys saw the scan they did of the pyramids and how legit all that is, but it really has you wonder what was going on before all that.
Well, the pyramids are very amazing. Now, my background is engineering, so I like to look at them from kind of the physical aspects, the engineering aspects of it. And I am going to touch on not so much Tuesday. I might give one example like the pyramids, and I might give the one that I'm talking about that I'll share with you now. But I'm going to give a lot of examples in the talk that I do in June. But for example, the pyramids, the great pyramid called the Pyramid of Cheops or Khufu, depending on which writer you're...
I call it the big one.
The big one, yep. just an example. What we know today by studying just the blocks themselves, they had to have been cut probably quite a distance upstream the Nile. And we're talking about blocks that are 2 tons and more. In fact, some of them are much larger. So they had to be cut. So they had to be quarried, taken upstream of the Nile, transported by boat, unloaded. These are huge blocks. And they had to be transported to the site, and they had to be placed in position. Now, I did some calculations. They estimate that the Great Pyramid is composed of 3 million blocks. Now, these are blocks, like I said, that are several tons.
I would not have guessed that. Wow.
3 million. And if you just do a simple calculation, and you're assuming that these were built within the lifespan of the Pharaoh, in order to place, well, in order to cut, transport, place all of these blocks, and if you estimate at a 72-hour work week, they probably worked longer than that, it would take 40 years to place those blocks, and they'd have to place 20 blocks per hour.
Wow.
Well, not only place them, but cut them, transport them, and place 20 blocks an hour over a 40-year span, given a 72-hour work week. So that's more than a 40-hour. That's almost a two-shift day, if you will. We don't have the technology today to perform such a feat. So what was going on at the time that these...
Go ahead, AJ.
Do you have a viewpoint that they might have been built before the flood, or do you think they might have been built after?
No, they would have had to have been after the flood. Everything after Babel is post-flood. Yeah, they would have to be after the flood.
Interesting. Okay.
AJ, listen, we're running out of time, but I want to thank you for your call. And stay on the line so we get your contact and get a gift to you. I hope to hear you on the show again. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. And listen, we've been visiting with Ray Mondragon. We do have about 3 minutes, but I want to make sure before we put a bow on it, we mention this again. Ray keeps saying he'll be speaking. This is going to be next Tuesday night at Faith Church in Albuquerque, Central and Moon on the south side of Central. The Creation Science Fellowship in New Mexico meets there the third Tuesday of every month, 7 o'clock. CSFNM.org for details on the organization. And to see the regular schedule of who you can expect to hear from, it'll be Ray on Tuesday. And as Ray mentioned, he plans to be back in June for part two of this look at Babel. Ray, any more before we wrap it up here in the next minute or two?
The main thing I want to accomplish on Tuesday is kind of lay the foundation for...
By the way, no cost to...
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Lay the foundation for these specific archaeological things that we find all over the world, like pyramids, but there's other technologies as well. There's other things. For example, there are a lot of structures that are aligned astrophysically. In other words, they were definitely constructed to align with some of the constellations or the sun. Obviously, is one of the main things that they're aligned. And there's definite scientific evidence that they had a considerable astrophysical understanding.
Yeah, I forget which one it was. I saw one about pyramids.
And these are early cultures.
Yeah. And I saw one, and it was, and they mentioned that, how almost every time it's, that's something that's applied.
In fact, the pyramids themselves are aligned.
Right. There was this one, and I think it had several pyramids that were, in Giza.
There's some near Mexico City, for example.
But they couldn't, for the longest time, figure out, they couldn't make the connection. And then they found where there was this one star that was only visible every so many years or so. It was, it's pretty incredible how it connected and how much that was a part of their culture and building. But Ray, appreciate your time. For those interested, we mentioned briefly chafer.edu because you're a professor there. For those interested, what will they find?
Well, they just put out the summer schedule, and I don't remember the exact courses, but there's three of them.
And you're going to be part of this?
No, I won't teach over the summer, but there's three courses that people may be interested
okay.
in.
And find Ray's stuff, what he teaches at Chafer, at his website, forhisglorynm.com. Author of the book, Science Is God Shouting. You'll find details at truegracebooks.com. Ray, we're out of time. Thanks.
Or Amazon.
There you go. Appreciate you listening, and thanks for tuning in to ABQ Connect.